Today, why the government wants to restrict your right to protest. For the past few weeks, despite lockdown restrictions making large gatherings illegal, thousands of people across the UK have been taking part in protests. Their placards and banners read, "Kill the Bill," in reference to a new piece of government legislation that would give the police greater power to curb demonstrations like these. At a protest in Bristol last Friday, tensions spilled over.
By all accounts, the protest was largely peaceful until about 10 o'clock, and scuffles erupted between police and protesters. In videos, we saw incredibly violent scenes of police using shields to batter protesters sitting on the floor, protesters throwing bottles and other objects back at police lines.
Guardian reporter Damien Gale spoke to people who were there.
One woman I spoke to said she was with a group of people who were deliberately trying to stay on the periphery of the demonstrations. And she had actually spoken to officers as well to ask them for advice on how she could avoid being caught up in a difficult situation. And they said, well, you know, if you just move when we tell you to, you're going to be fine. And despite her trying to do this, she found herself overtaken by the police, knocked to the ground and hit on one side by two police women and on the other side by two policemen. And she sent me photographs of her injuries, which looked very severe.
The photographs this woman sent Damien showed her covered in bruises, and she wasn't the only one. Others also said they were hurt, and it was reported that several police officers had broken bones, although Avon and Somerset Police later had to retract these claims. All of this has done little to improve confidence in the police at a time when the government wants to hand them even more power. From The Guardian, I'm Rachel Humphreys. Today in Focus, what is the Police and Crime Bill, and why are so many people protesting against it? Mark Townsend, you're the Home Affairs editor of The Observer, and these protests that have taken place across the country in recent weeks have been in response to the Police Crime Sentencing and Courts Bill, which was introduced by the government last month. What's in it?
Well, the bill's extremely wide-ranging, contains dozens of new changes to crime and justice in England and Wales, tougher enforcement, longer sentences. But the element that's received scrutiny is the parts on restrictions on protests.
The government's bill targets protesters causing too much noise and says that those who cause annoyance could be jailed for up to 10 years.
And so you've got, ostensibly, police are given much broader powers. They can restrict protests if they think they're too noisy. Protests, just one person can be targeted. Essentially, the police have been given far more discretion. They can now criminalise protests that they deem a public nuisance. They go well above and beyond what most people would consider to be satisfactory in a liberal democracy.
And by giving the police this discretion to use these powers some of the time, it takes away our freedom all of the time.
I suppose what you're saying then is this bill actually criminalises certain characteristics of protest rather than giving police what they have at the moment, which is a slightly broader remit to respond to things as they happen.
Yeah, yeah, it's quite a sea change. I mean, so under current law, the police have to determine that demonstration could result in serious public disorder, property damage, before it can impose restrictions.
So it will impact on our ability to protest, but it's got a very long title, the Police Crime Sentencing and Courts Bill. What else does it cover?
Yeah, I mean, so much of this is classic Conservative stuff on crime content, you know, the sort of stuff that sits very well with their voter base. You've got increased sentences for child killers, you know, tougher penalties for attacks on emergency workers, police officers, NHS. There are also measures such as tougher sentences for rapists.
This is in addition to the bill's existing measures, which include a new statutory definition of domestic abuse that recognises the many forms abuse can take.
And so the Conservatives who back the bill have been saying that this will make women safer. But conversely, the criticisms, it does very little to actually make streets any safer for women.
The 296-page bill we will consider later today contains the word memorial 8 times and fails to include the word women once.
There's laws in a bill that could lead to 10-year sentences for defacing the statue. It was pointed out that actually, in theory, this means you could end up getting a harsher sentence for defacing some stone than for rape.
The government's message is they want to lock up people who damage the statues of slave traders for 10 years when rape sentences start at half that.
There's a lot of anger around other parts of this bill too, because of how it would impact on the gypsy and traveller community. What would this bill actually mean for them?
So it'll tighten up laws on trespass, which invariably are going to target the traveller and gypsy community. Now, this bill introduces a new criminal offence of living in a vehicle without a landowner's consent and gives the police more powers to remove roadside encampments. In short, the police can basically remove these vehicles, which are usually the homes of the traveller and gypsy community.
I guess this would actually have ramifications for all of us, Mark. This would impede access to land for everybody.
Yeah. I mean, there's also obviously, you know, a broader issue for us all, really, which is, you know, this curtails everyday freedoms. It curtails the way people may want to live their life for a period of time, or, you know, are forced to live in a vehicle because they're homeless, or just by choice. You know, it is an assault on much broader freedoms.
And it seems that we've only really been talking about this bill for a couple of weeks, even though it's been in the works for much longer. Why is that?
The reason really why we're now talking about it now is quite simple, really. It's the Sarah Everard vigil on March the 13th, held days before the bill was due to be debated in Parliament. Now, the police's heavy-handed response that night electrified the movement against the bill. Instantly, it shifted the debate to one about police overreach. And Conservatives and Home Secretary, for their part, have used the vigil, or Sarah Everard's killing, to say this is exactly why we need the bill.
The bill has faced a lot of public criticism, but how has it been received so far in Parliament?
Well, so it's passed its second reading by 359 votes to 263. Most Conservatives backed it. Labour planned to abstain, but then opposed, but only after the police's handling of Sarah Everard's vigil. So that's how close it was.
Okay, so you've told us about what the bill is designed to do. But why now? Why does Priti Patel feel these reforms are necessary at the moment?
Well, two components, really. One is the BLM protests from last summer, and perhaps more profoundly, Extinction Rebellion protests from the year before.
Damien, Mark thinks that the Black Lives Matter protests last year were a contributing factor to the development of this policing bill. You covered those protests at the time. Why do you think this is?
So we know that this government is incredibly anti-protest. Priti Patel must count as one of the most illiberal Home Secretaries that I can remember in my life. And she was infuriated by the Black Lives Matter protest.
Well, those protests were dreadful.
And indeed.
There are other ways in which people can express their opinions. Protesting in the way in which people did last summer was not the right way at all.
She has effectively said in one remarkable interview that she doesn't support protest.
I don't support protest, and I also did not support the protests that were associated.
You don't support protest?
It was quite obviously a slip, which she corrected herself on immediately after, but it was a very telling slip.
I think one of the pivotal moments in last summer's protests was the toppling of the Edward Colston statue in Bristol. The way the police handled this really infuriated Priti Patel, didn't it?
The police came under very, very heavy criticism for failing to prevent people from toppling the statue of the slave trader, Edward Colston. It seemed as though that they were being incredibly careful not to inflame their relationships with the Black community. And so we're taking a light touch on those protests in the city. And so when protesters were able to topple that slave trader's statue and ditch it into the harbour, people were asking, where are the police? Why have they not done anything about this? Why did they not stop this from happening?
Matthew Taylor, you're an environment correspondent for The Guardian. We've just heard from Damien about how Extinction Rebellion protests, which you've covered for the past few years, are partly why the Home Office is considering toughening the laws around demonstrations. Why do you think this is?
Well, I think that the Extinction Rebellion protests posed a dilemma for the police.
It is a challenging week. It's the Easter weekend now, as you know. It's a hot weekend. There's a lot going on in London, right across London. And every day we've had over 1,000 officers. In fact, I think it's probably now over 1,500 officers working to police these protests.
They're designed to pose a dilemma for the police. They were explicitly peaceful and considerate. They tried to work with the police ahead of the protests, but they also caused a level of disruption that wasn't able to be tolerated by society at large.
Their latest plan is to blockade London next week, where they're asking people to camp in the capital. And they want more arrests to attract the attention of the government to their cause.
So the police are in a difficult position. I think in that first April protest in 2018, the police had a very hands-off, softly approach, if you like, to the protests. There were pictures of the police dancing with protesters. And in the aftermath of that, there's a lot of criticism in the press, certainly from the right-wing press, of the police for being too hands-off and that they allowed too much disruption to occur. And I think the police felt slightly burnt by that. And then obviously you had a change of administration and a harder right conservative government came in. And I think there was a determination not to be caught like that again. And I think for the police, I think Chrysida Dick said before the Metropolitan Police Authority that they need more powers.
We have to work within the law. That is why we are talking to the Home Office about whether there could be any other law that might assist us in our powers, that would make us tactically faster and able to shift the disruptions or stop the disruptions more effectively.
The tactics that XR employed set out to make it difficult for the police. They were occupying roads and disrupting day-to-day life to an extent that they thought wouldn't be able to be tolerated. At the same time, there are enough of them to make it difficult for the police to take them all away and arrest them. And the tactics of XR at the time, which were critiqued for various reasons, were to get as many people arrested as possible to try and get people in the cells to try and overwhelm the criminal justice system.
You're here to say that if we decide to break the law in the interest of the planet, in the interest of future generations, well, you know what? I support you in that.
So the police would go to the government and say, you need to sit down with these people because we can't stop this on a policing level. And so it was designed to create problems for the police, and I think it did. I also think another key moment was when XR protesters blockaded the printing presses of some of the right-wing newspapers in this country. In terms of political reaction, that felt like a turning point. It was widespread criticism from the Conservative government at that time. There's condemnation in the press.
It's pathetic, actually. These people are dreadful. Indulge them one day, 3 days, they're coming back on Thursday, they're coming back on Friday. They've got no brain cells between them.
And I think it was decided then that this sort of civil disobedience couldn't be tolerated to this extent. And I think part of this new bill will allow the police to impose limitations on so-called static protests, which are basically occupations, in terms of time, in terms of noise. And so I think that would, if that goes through, would have a big impact on XR's existing tactics.
Mark, you've covered the police and protests for many years now. And in 2009, you reported on the death of Ian Tomlinson, a newspaper vendor who was walking home from work during some G20 protests when he was caught up in a scuffle with police. What happened in that case? And how do you think that's impacted on the way police handle protests?
So Ian Tomlinson, the newspaper vendor, was just walking home during the G20 protests in 2009, became inadvertently caught up in a scuffle with police. One of them violently attacked him from behind.
The coroner described how the constable struck the father of nine on the left thigh with his baton and pushed him to the ground.
moments later, Tomlinson had a heart attack and died.
From being on the ground, the 47-year-old is tracked, walking off, but then collapsing around the corner.
So, I mean, obviously, this you know, placed huge scrutiny on the Met, the police in general.
Today's hearing has resulted in the maximum penalty that was ever available to the panel. Dismissal due to gross misconduct.
There's a report by the Chief Inspector of Constabulary, and you know, he warned basically what everyone sort of seemed to know, which was a kind of a hardening of policing style in the years preceding Tomlinson's death. You know, this sort of steady erosion of the British approach to policing.
And how did that sort of, you know, did that have an impact on the way that the Met police protests even now?
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of in a decade or so since, you know, there's been a sort of a steady dilution of this forceful approach. I mean, it's way less heavy-handed, you know, rather than cattling people, and in some cases, you know, cattling children, you know, officers let people disperse in their own time, you know, given the space to make their own decisions, you know, in a sense, giving control back to the public instead of seizing the space.
Do the police, Mark, feel that this bill is needed? You know, would they welcome these new powers that the government are proposing they should have?
I mean, some do, some don't. I mean, privately, it's become quite divisive, really, as an issue. Preston Dick, the head of the Met, clearly wants these powers. Others don't see the point in them. So there's no huge public kind of debate among the police, but you know, internally there's a divide. I mean, we've heard from retired officers about concerns over these new powers. I mean, you know, I've spoken to serving officers who feel the same way. They feel by giving more responsibility, more discretion to intervene in protests, you know, means there's more scope for mistakes, more scope for confrontation and just conflict and dispersing people.
Do you think that there is some sympathy for the police at the moment, both for how they've dealt with protests and events over the past year and also more recently with the Sarah Everard vigil?
Yeah, and undoubtedly. I mean, I've got sympathy for them. It's an incredibly difficult kind of high-wire act sometimes to police a very impassioned, emotional crowd. And, you know, some elements may be quite leery. Other elements might be, you know, bent on violence. Others might be trying to sort of be peaceful. There might be families involved. It's such a sort of, you kind of have such a cross-section of people in a very tight space and trying to keep all that safe. You know, it's a very difficult and complex and requires fast decision making and really brilliant judgment. And humans get that wrong sometimes.
What needs to happen before this bill is passed? You know, what stage is it at?
So it's passed its one hurdle in Parliament. So now it goes to committee stage where, you know, people will be able to debate elements of it that causes concern. You know, undoubtedly, portions will be changed. And so by the time it comes back to Parliament, it may well be very different. You know, I mean, it's almost certainly going to come for a bumpy ride.
Coming up, what would the passing of this bill mean for the future of movements like Extinction Rebellion and Black Lives Matter? Matt, how important is protest to the UK environmental movement? And how damaging could this bill be to it?
I think if you look back at where we were a few years ago, maybe 2017, the sort of conversation around climate was completely different. And that's changed partly because of XR and their successful protest campaign of telling the truth, of raising the alarm about the scale of the crisis, partly through the school strikes movement, both here and globally, and obviously with Greta Thunberg at the head of that. And the role protest has played has been transformative in this country. It's pushed it's changed what we're at, the context in which we're allowed to discuss climate. It's changed the language that people use, including politicians and policymakers and journalists. So it's been absolutely pivotal.
Protest is a fundamental human right. What do you think we as a society lose by restricting that?
Yeah, I mean, you've got to ask, where does that energy go? Where does that hope and those demands for a better future go if you make protest illegitimate? It'll be young people whose voices are not being heard at this absolutely key moment when we're making decisions that will affect their future for decades, and it's not an exaggeration to say centuries to come. This next decade will define the next 1,000 years probably in terms of what we do in terms of the climate. And so to try and curtail young people's voice at that moment seems to me indefensible.
The anti-apartheid movement, of which I was part, marched continuously on Trafalgar Square for black and white people to be treated as equal. Does the Secretary of State seriously believe that they should have been arrested because they caused an annoyance? Throughout Britain's history, protest has been a fundamental method for the public to voice dissent.
I think if this bill goes through in its current form, it's going to be a huge attack on our democratic rights in this country. But what I do see is that if this bill goes through, it's not going to limit protest. In fact, I think it's going to inspire more protest.
Damien, thank you very much.
Cool, no problem.
That was Damien Gale, Matthew Taylor and Mark Townsend. Read their work and keep up with the latest as Kill the Bill protests continue this weekend at theguardian.com. Also, for more on how the policing bill will limit the right to trespass, I recommend reading a piece George Monbiot wrote back in January called The Trespass Trap. This new law could make us strangers in our own land. Find it at the website. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Alex Atack and Alex Mislin. Sound design was by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Nicole Jackson and Phil Maynard. We'll be back tomorrow.